you see. And different racial histories being the source of their myths, that won't explain it. That just won't. It doesn't fit. It may say something about a certain inflection or aspect or peculiar thing about this particular mythology as against that one. Why does this group have one god, and that god is the god of their little society, you know, with them as the special people, and this group doesn't think that way? Their deities have to do with the world of nature, you know? What is it gives those different pitches to these different culture systems? That's special history and biography. But what about the general humanity? We all have, you can recognize a human being no matter where you see him. And so he must have the same kind of nervous system, basically. Therefore, his imagination must work out of a comparable base. And so what's so damn mystical about all that? That just seems to me to be obvious. And that's what the term collective unconscious is supposed to cover.
Joseph, you're always a delight. I get carried away on clouds of my own imagination as I listen to you. Yeah, Jungian psychology, it does seem to be a little more open than other more traditional forms or other traditional forms.
Well, you know, for some people, Jungian is a nasty word. And this has been flung at me by certain reviewers as though it just said, well, don't bother with Joe Campbell. You know, he's a Jungian. I'm not a Jungian. As far as interpreting myths, Jung gives me the best clues I've got. But I'm much more interested in diffusion and relationships historically than Jung was, do you see? Very, very much. So that the Jungians think of me as a kind of questionable person. And I don't use those formula words very often in my interpretation of myths, but it gives me the background from which to let the myth talk to myself. But Zimmer, I think, was my final guru, you might say, the one that really gave me the courage to interpret myths out of what I knew of their common symbols and so forth and so on. There's always a risk there, but it's the risk of one's own personal adventure, you might say, instead of just gluing yourself to what someone else found.
You brought up my next subject by mentioning Heinrich Zimmer as one of your gurus.
Yes.
That is the emergence of other cultural traditions, other forms into our own culture,
yes.
Namely this one, and the appearance of gurus, the appearance of teachers,
yes.
From other traditions, other religious forms. And I know that your own work has been influenced heavily by Buddhism and Hinduism, mm-hmm. and the models and the myths that are there. Mm-hmm. And you've done a beautiful job of translating them in a number of your books. What do you think of this transmigration of cultures as we see the East come to the West? And we hear the word synthesis, we hear the word of East and West coming together. How do you see that? And what do you think is the vision for the future of that? Are we moving towards something new, or are we going to synthesize the best from the East, the best from the West, and create something new, or are we going to go with old models? How is it going to happen?
Well, I don't think there can be a general synthesis of East and West, but there can be special syntheses in different places. I think what the West absorbs from the East is going to be one thing. What the East absorbs from the West is going to be something else, and it will differ from region to region. The Chinese are not going to want the same things that the Indians want. I don't mean only want, but need in the way of a spiritual food from the West. The West has spiritual food to give, and a lot of it, not just gadgets, you know. And now I can't talk about what's happening in India because I'm not an Indian, and I look at it from outside, or China or Japan, although I'm very fond of the Japanese situation and I admire enormously what they're doing with our Western things. But they're still Japanese. Now, I can say something about the East coming to the West, particularly in the field of religions and mythology. Our Western systems, from way back, but particularly from the 4th century in the period of Theodosius, have been institutionalized. Our mythologies are institutionalized, and salvation comes from membership in an institution. You see this sign all over the New York subways, go to church, you know, read the Bible. Well, that has to do with one definition of a religious life. You can't find it in yourself. You find it only through the church. The East, these men from the East come, whether they are Indians or Japanese or Tibetans, and they tell us the real mystery is in yourself. Well, we have that in our tradition, the kingdom of heaven is within you. Who's in heaven? God's in heaven. Where's God? Within you. That's not what the church advertises, you might say. God is in the tabernacle, you know, or the church, or something like that. And this thing that the Orient is bringing is a realization of the inward way. When you sit in meditation with your hands in your lap looking down, that means you've gone in. And you're coming not just to a soul that is disengaged from God, you're coming to the divine mystery right there in yourself. That's what the East is teaching us. That was in the Christian tradition. And we find it in the Gospel according to Thomas, which has been dug up out of the Egyptian desert, you know, in 1948. But it has been pushed out. The mystical, the truly mystical finding of the divine, not only within you, but within all things, is not favored by traditions. These are institutional religions. And I think the big thing that the Orient is bringing to us, the mysteries inside yourself. And that's that saying from the old Chandogya Upanishad from about the 9th or even perhaps 10th centuries B.C., Tatvamasi, you are it. That divine mystery that you seek to know is the very source of your own life. It is the being of your beings, and find it within.
So there's the mythical attraction, and at the same time, we see gurus gathering disciples about them, and people essentially, you know, changing perhaps their lifestyle, their habit of clothing, etc., and in following a master or teacher, a guru. How about that?
Well, there are two responses, quite natural, I think, to the guru. When anyone becomes a model for you, you tend automatically to imitate him. Little boys imitate their fathers. It's darling to see a little boy walks just like his father, you know, some little kid like that. And this is the spontaneous identification. It's through that identification that something's developing in you. So that's the first phase, let's say. But the second phase is to find your own self. And I think the wearing, for instance, of Oriental clothes, or even assuming of Oriental names, this is not correct. It's displacing you again. You see, you have mistaken the clothing for the message. And not everyone who says, Lord, Lord, you know, is going to get to the kingdom of heaven. Not everyone who wears a turban is a released spirit. So that's one way to get caught again. Then you mistake a certain attitude or manner of looking and life and living. And even such things as food taboos and all that, picking up all that stuff. That has nothing to do with the spiritual life. I've heard of a couple of Rishis over here whose first statement is, if you want illumination, you've got to be an American. Not a Japanese. I mean, to make believe you're Japanese is just to run off on a detour and get stuck in the woods. It's not in the manner of dress as on speech. It's in the manner of experience and illumination. So I think the guru thing, it can be a delusion, but everything can be a delusion thing. You got to get it the right way. And the thing about the guru in the West is that he represents an alien principle of the spirit, namely that you don't follow your own path. You follow a given path. The great guru in the traditional culture assumes the moral responsibility for his student's life. He tells him what he's to do. My God, that's totally contrary to the Western spirit. And our spirituality is that of the individual quest, the individual realization, authenticity in your life out of your own center. You see? That's not Oriental. So one has to take this message from the East, assimilate it to one's own dimension and to one's own thrust of life, not get pulled off. And wearing an Oriental costume is the first sign of pulled off the track. You're following someone else's path.
Joseph, a famous statement is, in wildness is the preservation of the world. And it's just occurring to me as we're talking, the connection that I always feel, and all of us feel when we get in touch with nature and wildness and the wilderness. And I go back to what we were talking about, the cities, and how in the city, most cities, nature is removed. It's not there anymore. And so much of mythology deals with human beings' connection with the earth, with nature, with the environment around us. And to some extent, perhaps our environmental problems of today are partly due to the fact we've gotten out of touch with the environment we live in. I want you to talk about just the relationship of environment through mythology to...
Well, you have to think first and realize first that